to the Imperial Governor of Ardwin. As decreed by the Emperor of Masks himself, Baru Cormorant is to take up the position of accountant and oversee the province and its currency. Give her any tools that she might require, and she will ensure that the kindness and might of our empire spreads and reforges this broken land. She is young, but has it not been measured that women in their prime are best mathematicians? Please overlook her origins, for she is not just an islander, but is a true supporter of the empire, as shown by the aptitudes, and I'm sure, will be proven by action. Send the jurisprudence my regards. The following episode contains massive spoilers for the book The Traitor Baru Cormorant by Seth Dickinson. Proceed with caution.
Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about our favorite queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today we are discussing Seth Dickinson's novel, The Traitor Baru Cormorant. This is a personal favorite of mine. It's a tough book to describe. It's got a lot going on. It's fantasy, but like it's very grounded fantasy. Like, this whole story could totally take place in like the real world, pretty much. Mm-hmm. It follows the titular Baru Cormorant. Her island is annexed by the Imperial Republic of Falcrest, otherwise known as the Masquerade. All the members of the government in Falcrest wear masks. And her island gets annexed. Basically, it's like a nonviolent takeover. It's one of those books where it's funny because it's like the twist is actually the title.
Yes, and she keeps saying it in the book over and over and over again, but we don't trust her because of how we're trained to perceive these sort of books. It's really masterfully done. I am really mad at you for making me read this back when I did.
Which is fair.
It's a very sad book.
It's so sad. It does kind of bury your gaze at the end. Although the author, Seth Dickinson, has said that he doesn't want to, like, give into that trope and, you know, to be patient with the sequels. I believe there's some quote to that effect.
It makes sense here. There's no other way to say it, but we're warned constantly and consistently, and there's always this little voice in the back of your head while reading this book that says something is not right. You're missing something. But what you're missing is right there on the page as well. So it's not even like baity. I'm not mad at it in the way that I was mad at like Lex or whatever. Right?
Yeah.
Everything here makes sense, and it's really, really, really good.
I don't even know where to start because I like so much about it. So maybe we should start. First of all, the first section of the book is set when Baru is growing up on her island, which I realize I didn't say the name of. It's Terranoak. And it's interesting that as Baru like comes of age, so too does like the Masquerade's rule over her island. It matures from at the start, you know, when Baru's really young. The Masquerade just has some traitors there and they've signed like a treaty. Mm-hmm. And then by the time that Baru is like graduating from an imperial school to take an imperial merit exam and get placed somewhere, basically the Masquerade rules Falcrest, controls them outright. You know, there's no doubt that they're in charge and that Terranoak is their colony. And so I think it's fascinating. And you see this insidious, like, slow creeping. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, the values of the Empire slowly creep into the Terranoak society. Mm-hmm. And that's reflected in Baru's education.
And not only slowly, but It's slowly and then all at once, almost.
Right.
In a very terrifying way.
That's a good way of putting it. Like, there comes a tipping point. And I think that tipping point is actually when there's the pandemic or the epidemic. Which I reread this book multiple times. I'm still not sure if the plague was intentionally brought by the masquerade or unintentionally, but they definitely use it to begin kind of their imperial eugenics program in earnest.
I don't for a second believe that it wasn't intentional, especially because Baru knows that it came from the pigs that they brought. So it's like,
right.
It is their fault, but not for an instant do I think that it was an accident, especially since they're so systematically taking over places with such a practiced ease. Do you remember when they all received like a dictionary or something in the beginning to teach everyone the language of Falkrest on the island?
Yeah.
And it had numbers at the bottom to say what number of the dictionary that one was. And Baru said that she almost couldn't count that high. They did it without much trouble, too, with the introduction of paper money and the treaties and the schools going up so quickly. Like, everything else was so surgically intentional that nothing in my mind at any point was like, oh, they did it by accident.
It's amazing just how much of a long game that the Empire, the Masquerade, is playing here, because they're not blunt instruments. They don't just send their troops to conquer. It's like small things like that, the dictionary, because they know that if they change the words that people are thinking, you can sometimes adjust the way they think about things. I know that's a controversial theory in linguistics, but it's at least a theme, you know, like 1984 had the same idea that, like, you know, if you get rid of the words for, like, rebellion, then people won't know how to rebel is, like, a thought. Yeah. And, yeah, it's just so sinister. And you see it coming as Baru is just growing up, and you feel bad for her, but she also excels in the system. That's the thing, though. She's so good at it.
She's amazing at it from the first second she meets Ferrier, the merchant.
Caradine Ferrier, yes.
Yeah. She immediately catches on to his games and plays along masterfully. And we're speaking of like a very, very young child at this point.
Yes.
And she almost immediately understood that all of these Falkresti merchants are taking gems and coin and precious metal as payments and only pay with paper money. And Baru caught on very quickly that they're trying to basically impoverish this place. And not only that, but tie its economy absolutely to the Falkrest
exactly. market. Yep. And this is also when Baru, like, so she becomes an accountant, and this is where she starts showing off her prowess for accounting, is when she starts noting, you know, the trades and what people are making, and kind of becomes very savvy to that.
Extremely savvy.
Yeah. And in fact, she's able to wield accounting as, like, a very powerful weapon, and she actually uses it to later on, actually, much to her advantage. But I wanted to talk also about Caradine Ferrier, because he comes in ostensibly as a merchant, but he's truly actually one of the powers behind the throne of the Masquerade. He's like a spy / agent who operates in the imperial interests abroad without any formal designations, or he's just a spy, basically. But like a very powerful one.
So you read the trilogy, right?
Yeah.
I'm still very early on in the second book. But the way that he seems, just everything Baru notices about him. For example, do you remember that conversation she has with him about wearing masks?
And
she asks, he tells her that servants of the Empire wear masks while performing tasks for it. And she asks him, when do you wear a mask? I've never seen you wear one. And he avoids the question entirely. And that made me think that he is so far above everyone else's station that there's very little that he wears the mask for, because his service is so kind of high up that whoever he serves, it's very few people, if even that.
That's interesting, because I always thought of that as just kind of the implication being like he's always wearing a mask. But I like your interpretation of it too.
Yeah, that's like the immediate thought of he doesn't wear one because it's always there. But also, because I read that conversation a second time, and on second read, I read a little bit more into it. I don't know if that's just... but that's what it felt like to me on the second read.
Yeah, that makes sense. I don't want to say... There's something I could say. I want to spoil one of the future books. Suffice to say that...
Keep it in.
He's a complicated character. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't think there's any simple characters in this book.
No, that's one of the things that this book does so well, is that every character has a lot of depth to them. There's a lot going on. They've all kind of been impacted by the Empire in some way. It's changed them. And a lot of this book, despite the fact that it's about masks that the Empire wears, in that sense, it's about revealing what's beneath that mask and seeing how these people have been changed or hurt by the Empire. And that includes Caradine Ferrier, who is a high ranking, you know, member of this government, who basically acts without any qualms about what he is doing. He is also in some way impacted by it. And so it's so fascinating. And even Baru, who's the hero, does a lot of despicable things.
She does do quite a few things that can be considered bad. From the reader's perspective, we understand that what's happening is she's being indoctrinated into this this whole system as a child. And we see other children around her also get pulled in. And those who are not conforming get kicked out of this school, right? But outside of outside of the walls, there's a plague. There's a tremendous amount of hardship. It's constantly mentioned in that first part that there are orphans everywhere, and that shocks Baru because she said that everyone has such intricate family lines with so many relatives that it's very, very rare that anyone becomes an orphan. And the fact that there are so many hints at just horrific actions by the Fulcrest Empire.
Yeah. You see the disruption of Terran Oak. And again, this is intentional. It isn't just because these orphans are so easy to manipulate. Like, you can take them to one of these special schools. They've got no family. All the values that they're going to learn are going to be taught by the Fulcresti instructors. Mm-hmm. So again, it's all intentional. Like, every element. That's what's so fascinating about this, is just like how it's all like clockwork, designed to promote the Empire. And it's so intricate. It's like clockwork. It's so fascinating. But Baru does take the like imperial like meritocracy exam. Mm-hmm. With the hopes of going to Fulcrest. I think in her head, she's telling herself she's going to go to Fulcrest and change things and make life better for Terran Oak.
Not only that, but she promises it to her parents as well.
Right. Because one of her fathers gets, like, disappeared.
Now, question for you.
Yeah.
That was completely Ferrier's doing, right? Because...
Oh, yeah.
Because, so Baru has two fathers and a mother.
Yeah.
And one of the fathers stays behind to look after her while the other two go off to fight plainsmen, and Falkrest helps them with that. But on the way back, her mother tells her that her father disappeared. And up to that point, every single time Farrier has seen her around her two fathers, he just always appeared disgusted. And because of how much interest he takes in Baru, it's pretty much the only possibility at this point that he's the one who made sure that her father disappears, so that she's left only with that kind of conventional two-parent, a man and a woman unit. It's really frustrating.
In what sense? Say more, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
It's because we can see that Baru knows that it's happening. She might not figure that specific part out, but throughout the whole book, we don't for a second doubt that she is doing everything for Terranoke. That all of her actions are to save her home, right?
Right.
So while she does fall for a lot of the teachings, and she does become a part of a system, a very intricate and important part of that system, there's still her constant inner monologue that tells us that she is doing this to save her home. She is not a citizen of Falkrest. She is a traitor to them. And, you know, she's biding her time, this whole book, right? So, like, when she starts helping out the rebellion in the north to the place where she got sent to actually squash this rebellion.
Yeah, she gets sent, like, under the cover story that she's the new imperial accountant for a northern territory called Ardwin, which always gave me, like, Viking vibes.
Mm-hmm.
Just very, like, cold, harsh, and it's controlled by a series of, like, dukes, and it's divided into, like, 13 territories.
And, yeah, so when she gets sent there and starts helping out the rebellion, we as readers are kind of excited for her to finally be able to do something about Falkrest, at least in this place that has not been entirely captured yet.
Right.
But we also know the whole time that if she does this right now, that she will never be able to save her home the way she has wanted to for the entirety of the book. Right?
Exactly. Yeah, because as, you know, mighty as the Arduini rebellion can be, you know, they're a lot of they're kind of like Vikings. They're very seasoned, fierce fighters, but they're such a small population relative to the Empire. You know, like the whole point of their revolt is just to like declare their independence. They know they can't beat the Empire. So like they know that she knows that like, even if I succeed with this revolution, I can't save Terranoke. Terranoke is beyond my grasp.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like she can lead an army of like people, of like soldiers from Ardwin to Terranoke. Like, that's never going to happen.
I think the really, really amazing part of this book, just the way that it's written, is that by that point, like 3/4 in, you kind of give up on her dream to save her home because of the choices that she has made, right? So the fact that in the end, the book turns out the way it does, it's both just like, I felt pure anguish for about a week afterwards. I was so upset.
So to reveal what happens, basically, Baru leads the army to like what they believe to be a decisive victory over Imperial forces. And while they're celebrating, Baru finally like hooks up with Tain Hu, who is one of the dukes, Duchess of one of the provinces of Ardwin. And it's like everything's working out perfectly. They've, you know, beaten the evil Empire. Baru's with the woman she loves. You know, they're going to become like co-queens of the new Ardwin, you know, kingdom. It's perfect. And then it's revealed that Baru was setting this up the whole time on behalf of the Masquerade. The goal was to get all the rebels to do this now so that they wouldn't cause a bigger, more dangerous rebellion in the future. And the military victory gave them a chance to get all the rebels really in ones. One place. Yeah. Yeah, all the leaders in one place, and to kill them all. And so Baru basically reveals that she's been working for the Masquerade the whole time, and that she did this in order to gain entrance into the kind of higher echelons of Cara Dune Farrior's, like, spy. Now I'm forgetting the name of their, like, group.
One name?
The Cryptarchs. The Cryptarchs. That's what they're called. The Cryptarchs. They're, like, the spies. She wants to become a Cryptarch, and this is... And basically, Cara Dune Farrior had said, like, okay, if you help us crush this rebellion, we'll make you a Cryptarch. And that's what happened.
And that's not even a surprise at that point. By the time you get to that part as a reader, Dickinson lets you figure it out, like, a paragraph before it actually happens.
Yeah. But I was in disbelief.
Yes, absolutely. And I was very mad at myself when I was reading that part, because literally Baru over and over and over again tells us that something is happening, that she hates herself, that she has to do this, that she's a traitor, that she's gonna save her home. Like, she keeps saying these weird phrases in her narration to us.
Yeah.
That for us, we're thinking, she's there doing this to rebel in the place she's at right now. But it doesn't click at any point. Like, it's very disjointed little snippets of thought that we get. And it's easy to ignore throughout the entire narrative until it actually happens. And then everything makes perfect, clear sense. And you know that this was always coming, and that she was always gonna betray the rebellion because she was never a part of it. Like, the traitor's qualm, right? That's a huge part of the book. The idea that there's no way to really weed out rebellions in places like these because you're only ever seeing those who are always gonna rebel and never submit. You're not seeing the traitors, the rebels who are able to live quietly and wait for their time.
So, the kind of sleeper agents.
Yeah, the ones that will only come out when victory is absolute. And
right.
And that's what Baru did. She created a situation in which they thought that victory was absolute.
Yes, to draw out those hidden rebels.
And, like, she's been seeing it the whole time. To our faces.
Yep.
And we never believed her because we want her to be kind, or we want her guilt to not eat her up because we like her. We want a happy ending for her and Tain Hu, that massive, beautiful, butch lesbian that Baru meets.
Yeah.
Who's super cool.
Man, every time Tain Hu enters, by the way, it's just like, she's the coolest person. She's just like, you can just like, when you're just reading, you're like, this woman just like swaggers into every situation. Like, she owns the place, and she totally does by the end of it. Like, she's so cool. And you just love Tain Hu. And
it's really like, funny because, like, Tain Hu is whipped for Baru. Yes. But Baru is only able to see it through her rose colored glasses as well. So they're both kind of like super, super into each other.
Yeah. It is unfortunate. Like, it's just like, you feel bad on some level because Baru and Tain Hu only get one night together. And it's like, Baru, you could have done this so much sooner. But on the other hand, she couldn't. Yeah, she couldn't, because then she would have.
She wouldn't be able to do this.
Yeah.
I fully believe that she would not have gone through with it. She would have caved, come on.
Yeah, that's true. She allows herself one night, and that's it. And that's like the level of control that Baru has to exhibit throughout the book.
Yeah.
And then the worst part is that, like, Tainhu isn't killed along with the other nobility. Instead, the masquerade, the cryptarchs, the people like Caradine Farrier, take her hostage and basically say, we'll keep Tainhu alive for you if you agree to always serve the interests of the Empire, and if you do anything against the Empire, we'll kill her.
And they don't say it in as many words, right?
They
imply everything.
They never
everything.
Say that.
And they Baru say, takes like, advantage of that as well.
Yeah. And they say, you know, like, they basically, because they're doing it so wink, wink, nudge, nudge, they say, like, we're going to kill her unless you intercede. And Baru's like, oh, no, she means nothing to me. She was just part of the job, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm really paraphrasing things here. So,
But that's exactly pretty much
and
what
so,
she says.
Yeah, they drown Tainhu in front of Baru. Mm-hmm. And Baru has to sit there and watch like she doesn't care.
And she does it.
It's so painful. Oh, but can you imagine, like, the woman you love most in the world having to watch?
Not only can people... I not imagine that, I don't want to.
God.
And I think the thing that kind of carries me over is that Tainhu gives her permission.
Yes.
She understands because she was doing the same.
Yeah.
And she knows that Baru is so much more capable than anyone has been up to this point. And she understands why she did what she did. And like, that makes it a little bit okay for me in the end, but also it makes it hurt more. Ugh, Seth.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's a... God, the last few chapters are just so painful on so many levels, but so good. That's the problem. Like, I recommend this book to a lot of people, and I'm like, I don't know, I can't say anything. It's just like, you're going to love this book until it destroys you.
Yeah, and no one believes that sentence, right?
Because
we're kind of used to things happening in books, and when everything comes crashing down, it's much more drawn out, and there's a hopelessness there that you see is coming, and you kind of just have to go through it till the end. Here, it hits you in the face, just like Baru got hit in the face, and like, out of nowhere, it just happens, and that's it. And it's literally like a paragraph. And the entire book becomes recontextualized immediately into what
and
we...
Yeah,
into what we assumed it would be in the beginning. I'm getting heated here.
It's kind of like... I'm trying to think of what to... It's like... I don't know. It's like one of those pictures that when you look at it, there's either two people or a vase. And like, that's what that paragraph does. Like, it makes you see the vase where you saw two people before. It just completely flips everything. And I can't. I love this book and I love the sequels, and there's so much good stuff in them. But oh my God.
It's very hard to read.
And now when I was doing my reread, knowing it's coming, and it's just...
It's worse.
It just reminds me of... Oh God, I'm going to be very dorky. So I've been replaying part of Final Fantasy XIV, and there's a part of it that I just want to, like, live in forever. And I just, like, want to stay in this moment and, like, having to know that, like, the story proceeds on from here and things get really sad. It's just hard. Like, you don't want to face reality, and it's...
Yeah.
Because now that I know it's coming, gosh, it's so good. It's so well written, and I think what's so good about it, too, that's so hard to explain, is that, like, in retrospect, this was what was always going to happen. And you look back at, and again, you get mad at yourself, because you're like, I knew this. The title told me what was going to happen.
Baru
told
times.
Us what was going to happen. And we thought, oh no, you know, she's going to have a change of heart. She's with the rebels now. That this is going to, everything is going to work out great. And then, no.
And here's the thing that's so very frustrating, right? So Falcrest has taken over all of these places, and they're using pretty much the same strategy. And that lets us believe that Baru, I mean, she does understand what's happening there on a very personal, emotional level, right? So it's her battling with logic.
Yeah.
But we know that she's a logical person. And we know that the first thing for her is always going to be her home and her parents, right? So it makes sense that this is what she does. But because we want her to succeed freeing this second place that Falcrest has decimated in front of us as readers.
Yeah.
It makes us not believe what's actually happening. The same way that it makes the characters believe in Baru being on their side. I think the second most painful moment for me was in the end, right before it is revealed that she's a traitor. Do you remember there's one of the dukes comes for her and all the other dukes defend her because they think that he's a traitor?
Yeah.
But we find out that the reason he was going for her is he figured out that she was, that she sold them out, that she set this up, and that they're all gonna die.
Yeah.
And his friends and comrades and family kill him, thinking that he is bad.
And in reality, he was trying to save them.
And not even save them, but... because there, I don't think he... I think he knew that that's it. Everything is over. Or,
I guess get revenge for them,
before, yeah.
Some little modicum of justice.
And it doesn't happen. And at first, as we watch it, like, as we read it, it's infuriating because it was like this really cool character who's been very friendly with her and kind to her and smart, who's been a true companion to her up to that point, and all of a sudden he like betrays her. What? And it's like this 1-2 punch. We get that very small betrayal that we find out came from nothing but a place of honor and the need to defend his people. And then we have Baru do that. And from her end of things, it's so much worse. Because she is doing a bad thing. And like, I felt very gross after that ending.
It's, yeah.
I picked up the second book. Like, I picked it up. It's a good narrative.
I will say... the future books are not quite as devastating. There's some devastating moments, I suppose.
There's no way there wouldn't be after this.
Yeah.
Just because of how far she has to fall, how very quickly, right? This is just the beginning of her descent. Plan to destroy Falcrest.
Right.
So this is literally like step 1.5.
Yes.
Right, because she has... like, the first step is just that she has to get to Falcrest.
Yep.
And that's what she does. But, oh my god, the price of that.
But she's an accountant, so she's willing to pay it. She knows she's able to move the abacus around, the beads on the abacus, and she figures it out what's worth it to her to save her people in the way that she wants to. It's such a good book, though. For me, this is one of my favorite fantasy books of all time. But it's so hard. Well, first of all, it's hard to like sell it to people because it's just like, oh, it's about an accountant in an empire, and also it's like there's masks, and it's such, I don't know. Like, I'm very bad at explaining like why this book is good to people because it's just. It's hard to explain it without giving parts of the plot away or without, I don't know, like, I just have trouble selling it to people. But, like, when I've gotten people to read it, like, I got you to read it, I got our friend Sarah to read it, and everyone loves it and also kind of hates it.
Uh-huh. I think you got me with that accountant line. I think that, well, like, but like, I'm a special case, obviously.
It's so innocuous. I'm just like, why would you, why would there be a book that is about an accountant?
Why that, wouldn't you?
I mean, accountants are pretty cool.
Exactly.
If there are any accountants listening, you are very cool. You know what you do is very helpful.
It's unlike very lawyers. Helpful. It's
lawyers,
very helpful.
You know what you did.
You know what you did, lawyers.
oh gosh.
Let's alienate. Yeah, the lawyers, let's get specifically.
Let's get the most litigious people on earth mad at us.
yeah, like it's. Well, I'm trying to get you to read Planetfall, and that okay. book is about an engineer whose whole thing is that she's in charge of keeping the printers working in, like, a space colony.
Okay. Like, paper printers?
No, like the, or like 3D, 3D sci-fi. Okay. Everything is printed printers.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to check it out. I
You're not allowed to read it first because I'm going to give you a different order.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. We need to do the two read. We're getting very off track here.
Yes.
Well, the other thing I wanted to mention were the qualms, because they're such a big theme and I love them, because mm-hmm. there's the traitor's qualm, which you mentioned. There's the hierarchic qualm, which is about, like, I'm just going to read it because
it's very well written. Yes.
The sword kills, but the arm moves the sword. Is the arm to blame for the murder? No. The mind moves the arm. Is the mind to blame? No. The mind has sworn an oath to duty, and that duty moves the mind, as written by the throne. So it is that a servant of the throne is blameless. Mm-hmm. And there's other qualms that get introduced. I forget which book, so I'm not going to say which qualms get introduced, because I think they might be in the second and third book. But there's these qualms which are kind of presented as kind of not quite catch-22s, but kind of word puzzles that mm-hmm. that are used by imperial agents to, like, I don't know. They're very, it's like, but they're kind of like guiding philosophies.
Yeah, they're used to bend the laws and the rules and get away with things, but they're also used to control the agents and keep them loyal. Yeah. It's like this weird thing where it's both something that is very loose with its meaning, but also terrifying enough that the agents themselves are kind of tied to the throne.
Yeah, they're ways of like, on the one hand, making people feel blameless for their actions, but then also, yeah, tying them to imperial rule and imperial thought.
There are so many little things like that when it comes to Baru's climb to the top, because everything is calculated, and she's competent as hell.
Yeah.
She, like, from the first moment of the book, she just understands things, and she does them correctly.
Yes, yeah. Well, like, that's the thing about this book, is that, like, all the women are kind of competent and cool. We haven't even talked about, oh god, I'm gonna butcher her name, Zayt Yawa. She's the, like, Inquisitor in Ardwin.
She is terrifying.
She's so terrifying.
So scary. Like, and I love her, though. Yeah. Baru feels uncomfortable around her, but I was terrified. Jesus.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, they in the movie version, she needs to be played by, like, Meryl Streep or someone who's good at being, like, this kind of very powerful older woman. That would be
Or someone like Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton would do an amazing, yeah.
Yeah, oh, God, that would be so, like, creepy. It'll be worse, I think, than having someone who's able to play, like, a very powerful woman. It's someone who's able to play a very powerful and unhinged woman.
Yes. But she's not quite unhinged. She's just, I don't know how to put it. She's just very...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so hard to explain. Oh, my God. I'm so failing. She's just so competent, I guess. She's so good at her job as an Inquisitor, and it's just terrifying. And she, like...
And we know that she believes certain things that she's doing.
Yeah.
And her intentions there are very clear, and she's happy to be doing those things. But we also know she doesn't believe in everything that they're doing. And the fact that right. she is doing it is even scarier.
And so she's kind of a forest, kind of a gray area, because it's like, which side is she on? And the answer is kind of neither. And she's just in it for herself and what she wants to do. And so that means she'll help Baru when it's convenient for her. And she'll oppose Baru if it's convenient for her.
Yeah.
And so in that way, she's just...
Which is exactly what Baru is doing.
Yeah. And they're all willing to... I guess the case here is that so many people in this book are willing to devil cross each other if it serves their own interests. And so when a character like Tain Hu, who is like just a genuinely good person,
yeah,
comes in, it's just like they're going to get destroyed.
She's so loyal and honorable. And from the very first moment we see her, she's that way. And like, she's the one who originally tricks the economy before Baru gets there and messes up the inflation that is planned.
Yeah.
So, like, she's very smart. And I think that's what allows her to forgive Baru in the end and help her with her plan, even in death.
Yeah.
Oh, I hate this book. It's so good.
I love this book. Yeah. Is that a good point to wrap up? Do you want to say anything else? I don't know. This feels like such a messy episode, but I don't know. It was good, but...
Because, like, there's no way to talk about this in an organized way because, like, it's legitimately infuriating and sad. And, like...
Yeah.
This is all, like, raw emotion right now.
That's the thing. Like, this book hurts you on such a level that you can't talk about it logically. And, like, I feel like we focused a lot and spoke very, like, concretely about the first quarter of the book because that's the part that doesn't, like, directly tie into us being emotionally damaged by the ending.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one part we can talk about and be like, yes, this is how, as cultural critics, we see this part of the book. But, like,
and after that, it's just feral time.
Yeah. We are returning to the caves. We just can't. This book is so good. If you haven't read it, we've kind of spoiled it, but it's still, I don't know, like, that might even be more interesting because if you know what's coming, just like having to get there is probably going to hurt you so much, and I feel bad for you.
Yeah, and if you listen to this point and didn't read the book, like, look, we warn you in the beginning of every episode. What did you do? We told you.
And if you've read the book, you know, and you've listened to this, we're sorry for re-traumatizing you.
Yeah, but also, like, come on, you understand us.
You knew what was coming when you saw the episode title.
That's why you listened.
Yes.
That's exactly why you listened. And then if you're like Chloe and finish the entire trilogy at this point, I bet you're laughing at us.
Up in your ivory tower. With a smug sense of superiority because
wearing a mask,
you know that wearing your mask because you are in the imperial capital and you know what happens, which is not to say that they go to the imperial capital. I'm not going to say anything about what happens because it goes places.
It is.
Honestly have to say the second book was completely not what I expected at all. That's all I'm gonna say.
It's very so good so far.
Yes.
Which I needed. I needed it to be different because I cannot take this for a second time, in all honesty. If it was similar, I would not have even started reading it.
And if the first book is a lot about, like, sexuality and about how Empire suppresses, you know, like, any kind of sexual expression because that is, they want, like, a hegemony. The second book is a lot more about gender, which is really interesting. There's a character who's non-binary.
Oh, man, and, I love a good gender.
Yeah, a good gender book.
I made you read a gender book. I'm so into gender books.
Yeah, there's a character in the second book who's...
Who's got a great gender.
Who has great gender. Just A plus gender. On that note, I guess we should wrap up.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much for listening to us have a group therapy session about this book, The Trader Baruch Cormorant by Seth Dickinson. If you have not read it and you want to experience all the feelings that we have expressed over the past few minutes, definitely check it out. So to plug our social media, we are at InMediaLez on Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. We have a subreddit, r/InMediaLez, and our website is InMediaLez.com. You can email us at InMediaLez@gmail.com, and feel free to email us with any questions or comments. And if you have a question or comment and you're okay with it, we would be happy to read it on one of our episodes and discuss it. And thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, and don't forget to review.
Oh, yeah. We should be soliciting reviews.
We keep forgetting to do it, but like, y'all know the drill if you listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Be very helpful.
We're just two idiots doing this in our bedrooms.
We're very smart.
We're two very smart idiots doing this in our bedrooms. So anything, you know, just a rating, a comment, anything you can do is just really helpful. Thank you so much.
See you in the next one.
May the imperial light of the Republic of Falkra shine down on you.
Unless you betray them.